cliffcentral.com.
Hi, I'm Steffi Nazwane, and you are listening to Be Lighted Show with Rami and Romeo on Cliff Central.
And that is correct. Welcome to Be Lighted with Rami and Romeo. Definitely welcome.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah, Romeo's here. As you can hear, he started talking immediately.
That a good thing?
Well, I suppose it is. At least you still have your voice, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, you call it small miracles. Regular, actually, it's a regular miracles where you actually never take time to actually think, I've got a voice. Yeah. I can see, I can hear. Yeah. You know, unlike you wake up and suddenly the voice is gone and you're supposed to perform an hour later.
No, that would be like, that's witchcraft.
That would be a disaster.
No, that's witchcraft.
Anyway, good morning. How are you, Ramza?
I'm good. How are you, my Ramza?
All right.
Have you been well?
No, I'm always well. And okay, good. Yeah, so in case you listen to this podcast six months from now, I'll still be well.
That's good. Yes. I like the positivity that you are bringing to the table.
You must be motivated and personally engaged. The best way to motivate yourself.
Did you just say like the title of your book?
No.
Yes, that's what. Gosh, yo, anything to advertise, eh? Wow.
Yeah. Welcome to Belighted, and we always appreciate talking to you. And our WhatsApp number is always 0797482090. That's 0797482090. And of course, we always appreciate your interactions on social media. Belighted Show on Instagram and Twitter, and of course Belighted Show with Rami and Romeo on Facebook.
Yeah, that's where we are. And today we've got an amazing guest in studio.
Tell me more about it.
What do you
in case I'm not here?
What?
It was just a conversation filler. Who is the guest? Tell us more about the
but
guest.
That's what I was doing.
Okay, continue, Ramesh.
Okay, guys, we have an amazing guest in studio.
Yeah.
And he is like very, very talented and everything that is nice and spicy.
Yeah.
He refuses to age. I don't know why. I just think that people who refuse to age are actually rude people because they're just trying to live like hundreds of generations without changing face. Yeah. In fact, Pharrell learned from him.
Right.
Pharrell learned from him that this is not how you get old.
Yeah.
He's a classic vampire. I've known him for like more than 30 years of my life and he still looks the same way. I mean, yeah, there's a bit of gray hair here and there, but I mean, who cares? I've got gray hair. So that's fine.
Where,
that's acceptable. Everywhere.
Where? What do you mean everywhere? Gray hair where?
Hey, on my head. It's gray. Yeah.
I'm saying where because I can't even see not even a single gray hair.
But you're looking at a wig. Hey, you know men
Let's
sometimes
continue.
They can just stress you out. So anyway, so we'll be talking to him about a whole lot of things that he's been doing in his life. I just feel like, you know, when you read someone's profile and it is like so long, you get tired along the way. You're like, okay, fine. Can someone give us a summary? Because this is just too much to take in, you know? It's like a whole Wikipedia thesis of some sort, you know? He can be a proper subject at school.
I was actually thinking his life could be put in a book.
Definitely, and people can learn a lot from him. But he's in studio today, and I don't know what Maromza knows about him. Maybe you should tell us what you know about this guy.
The thing is, for me, is we're talking about someone who is not stuck in what we call an actor's bubble. And what that is that, you know, this man finds a way to reinvent himself. You know, he is not caught in his past excellence. He pursues excellence. He is what we call an intrepid spirit. An intrepid spirit is someone who takes risks. You know, he can jump off a cliff without a parachute, but he'll find a way to land safely.
That's me. That's you, what?
Thank you for the compliment.
Okay, fine. But I didn't even say you can talk. You know that. But like,
it's not like I is. I didn't say who I am.
Yeah, no, we don't care.
I'm acknowledging compliments. As
no,
I
no. Just wait. Like just wait.
So ungrateful.
Guys,
Rami's already making an impression on our guest.
It's going to be a bumpy ride with this guy because, like Maromza said, he's such a chanter, a risk taker, and everything. Completely unpredictable.
Career redefined.
Huh? And we're going to talk to him. So, drum roll, please.
Here you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, today in studio.
Yep.
We've got the amazing, the talented, the versatile, Moriski.
Yeah.
The one who you can never predict. He is very, very strategic in what he does.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a surpriser.
Yeah.
He can catch you while you're not watching.
Yes.
He can surprise you with a whole lot of things. He has done it all, from acting to directing to assistant directing. Goodness, he's trained anywhere and everywhere. He has survived the fall of the SABC.
Nah, that's a good one.
And he's still standing.
Yes.
After all of that, he has been. He's played himself.
Yes.
He's played many characters.
Yes.
Flip. He's even played a ghost.
Yeah, man. Talk about immense talent. Huh?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, in studio today.
Yes.
We've got the one who comes in a nice package.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ever amazing, the ever talented, the ever sexy, the full body tattooed Mr. Neo Matsuyane.
Mutu Mutu.
How Mara.
This is the longest introduction I've ever had.
No, it's not, actually.
I felt like somebody was reading my obituary, which is my CV. Do you know how long my CV is?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the time, like I'm 15 minutes into the program, I haven't said hello. Rems.
Well, that's what we do. Hello, Mr. Nail.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone.
You need to understand you are very important to the show.
My word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. With all humility. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So, welcome. No, I forgot to say he's a voiceover artist. In case you start hearing all the sexy voices
amongst
coming
other
out.
Things.
Yeah. Amongst other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he speaks a whole lot of languages.
Yeah.
Nail.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I just tell you something, honestly?
Please.
I know where Sterkspruit is. It is in the middle of nowhere.
I know, yeah. It's far from everything.
It is far from far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know when far is here?
It reminds you of that place in there. Shrek that says called Far Far Away.
Yeah, it's like a land far away.
Yes.
Yeah, when you ask people where is this place, they say, hey, it's far.
Yeah.
What I know about Sterkspruit is that first it has one of the most confused weathers. Mm-hmm. Sterkspruit can snow today.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow you wake up, the sun is out. Completely. And the snow has disappeared. Completely.
Yeah.
Surrounded by a whole lot of mountains. Mm-hmm. And another thing is that there's no official language in Sterkspruit because people speak Xhosa and Sotho. Mm. So you don't know, Shap, what's the language in Sterkspruit? Because it's on the brink of...
It's at the bottom
of Lesotho.
Yeah.
Free State and the top of South Africa. The Transkei,
It's the Eastern Cape. In between, very much like Matatiele as well.
Exactly.
Right.
People are fluent in all languages, whether it's Xhosa or Sotho. Mm. Most of the people there are fluent in all languages equally.
Yeah.
And that's also where my name for languages come from. I was doing subjects in South Sotho there because I left Setswana here. But at the same time, I would go with them on Xhosa in the same class and I would read his Xhosa books just to say, how do you interpret this language?
Because
the only way to understand a people's culture is first to know their language.
Right.
Then you'll know how to address them.
Mm.
You know, because language comes with culture and also comes with mannerisms.
Right.
With everything else that you stand for as an individual. So if Rami comes to me and starts saying, Tobela.
Mm.
Already, if she's going to clap and she's going to say Tobela, then my response has to be equal to what she's giving me in terms of respected magnitude, as opposed to something like hello or hi, which we don't have in our languages, actually, in African languages.
No, we don't.
So there's a whole lot of embracing someone and recognizing their spirit in the moment you say Dumela. Dumela gore ke teng. Agree to my presence.
Yes.
You know, and that's why we say Ukai. So, are you here? So, yes. I'm here. Present. Gitting. Not I'm, you know, so there's all this whole new dynamism that comes with language, and also that's something that came in very handy in my career as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
To be able to speak and understand languages, because there's so much nuance that comes with language, and also so much culture, especially if you're going to be a creative and making movies, you need to understand why certain things can't be done in that context. That's why it's so important for us to be able to tell our own stories,
right?
Because there's so much subtext that we sometimes miss when people are making them, because they have no point of reference in as far as that particular culture is concerned. So you end up with a lot of misinterpretation of culture, and people switch off immediately,
right?
No matter how big the movie can be,
But
as soon as it becomes culturally irrelevant or insensitive, or it becomes culturally insensitive, which is also includes bastardizing language and everything else, then people you turn off. I can tell you that like so many movies that have been made about South Africans and about South African
but
icons,
the language
but
them.
The language, because South Africans are very sensitive about their
language.
In South Africa, the language culture is quite big, because it's been a big center of politicization as well, where we come from, you know. Language has been something else. If Romeo Mabasa was in Tsonga, then he used to live in Zone 8 Meadowlands and was forced to live there. Now we live in Zone 9 Midlands because of Sotho. That created a cultural...
I mean, look at Soshanguve as well.
Soshanguve, you know, and that created some kind of antagony amongst the South African races themselves. And distance as well, because then it meant I couldn't learn what Rami's culture is like because she lived next door or was not allowed to live there because of... what language you speak?
Ladies and gentlemen, the last time I checked, Rami and I were running this show. So let's kind of like bring it back.
No. I'm waiting
for Rami to say, let's take it back.
No, we are going to take it back.
Can you please not end our show before it even starts?
Before you actually take it back.
Yeah.
Because you raised a very important issue. Speaking of languages, because it is not even about the hardcoreness of what people are talking about is in the basic things.
The basic things,
just
the
saying
nuance.
Just saying hello, like hello. The greetings, because Rena in Sotho, ra dumela, or ra thobela, ra ithoba, is to be you humble yourself
in the presence
of the other
else.
Because you're acknowledging their presence. And when the Zulu says sawbona, it's like I see you
and can you see me too?
Can you see me too?
Exactly. Then you know you have an alibi. I'm here, I'm present.
I see you.
Between 9 and 10, you can't say I killed so and so in Soweto because I was in studio.
I was.
You recognize my presence.
So basically, this whole namaste thing, we've been doing it.
We
are the ones doing it.
But like I say, also, it's if you understand what goes into that language, into that greeting, then it's easier to also to respect the person's culture.
Yes.
Because then you know where they're coming from and why they say Rehona, even or Lekai, even though we're talking Pula. Pluralizing someone who's in singular, because that makes them more important than you are at that point.
Yes, true.
It also speaks to, I think you notice how when you know people's surnames,
yes,
you know that a Mkize
is a Kacheni.
Mkize is a Kacheni.
You sing praises to whoever Mapolova came before them.
Immediately when you greet people like that, they stop whatever they are doing.
Because you're touching a very spiritual side of where they come from. You're talking about their lineage, their ancestry, the everything that they represent, the only thing that they will take with them to their grave. That's why sometimes I'm very sensitive when people say, my surname is Matsunyane, not Motsunyane.
Your
name is the first and the last thing that you take with you to your grave.
Yeah.
We even write it on top of your grave. Here lie the remains of Neo M. Matsunyane. So it's important for people to get it right. So that they know who you are. Because if they're going to call me Neo or something else, then I'm not the same person as I was when I presented myself. If I say I'm Neo M. Matsunyane, and then you're going to call me Neo Matsunyane, that's somebody else.
But also,
that's my personality gone.
Let's talk about the passion. You see how passionate you are about what you're saying, and how about you.
I'm passionate
you embrace,
about life in general.
Embrace culture. But also, empowering others to know how to treat you. Because you talk, especially it borrows from what you're saying. You say you need to teach people how to spell, how to write your name and surname.
Exactly.
But also, how has the Western culture influenced how we take our culture seriously, especially the way you do?
It has influenced us because we cannot divorce ourselves from interacting with other human beings of other nationalities, whether they be black, white, or coming from whichever different part of the continent or world.
Yeah.
So, but that interaction does not mean you should lose your own self, your own culture, your own history, your sense of belonging where you come from, because nothing is as bad as not feeling a sense of belonging. Even in a relationship. You know, if you don't belong, you don't feel yourself as part of a relationship, whether it's with an, someone that you're intimate with, or your family, or your spiritual connections, or the people that you work with. If there is no sense of camaraderie between two people, then there's going to be blockages in how your spirit reacts to the other person. You know, so now also now we're faced with the dynamics where we have to interact with white people and black people and everywhere, but we also have a history. As a people, but also a history of interaction with people at some level where we were not liked, where apartheid, you know, put in certain values or mindsets or ways of thinking into other people. And but at the same time, when that apartheid ended, unlike they did, what they did in Germany what they did apparently is that they introduced some kind of lessons and schooling into the Germans to show them how wrong Nazism is, or how wrong Nazism was. You know, to say, come on, the entire country, say they reintroduced a new system of education to accommodate that. We haven't done that. We didn't do it. We're not even talking about it.
We're just going.
So our anger as those that came before Mandela and stuff is very, it hasn't been solved or addressed. The people who imposed the same anger on us are also like, that's why they can do what they like and still wave the old flag, because they're like, we don't care. They never had that kind of re-education that says, respect this man. Exactly. Say, so you guys were wrong, acknowledge, but at the same time, don't stay there. Let's rectify our attitude first. And when I talk about attitude, I also go into another field that I'm very passionate about. Attitude also goes with gender-based violence. If you teach your son from an early age to say, do not, the woman is as equal as you, and just respect the female for being female and for being an individual, that boy's attitude changes how he reacts amongst other females. And that is another passion that I'm doing, that I'm talking about, that I'm also going to be doing and filming going forward, talking to men of all races and stuff about gender-based values and issues, to say, guys, what happened in Africa? You know, gender-based violence is something that has been, it's been very bad. It used to be punishable even way back before civil, this modern kind of westernization came to us. You know, no pattern like home, we used to be
if you hit, there was a woman, penalty
but nowadays it's like it's become more habit than anything else. I always say, when I give talks, sometimes say, people, the African thing says it's a, it takes a village to raise a child, but it's becoming now a village to rape a child.
And that is my
you know what I'm saying? So now, so until we start with those attitudes of our young voices, young boys, teach them from a young age the same kind of education that people took with them to the mountains. The ones that we learned in the mountains. It's not there anymore. When you go into the mountains, it wasn't just about circumcision. It was about it was teaching lessons, lessons and teaching
and
them
values.
Like, this is how men behave. These are the values of life. But now that education is gone because of the influence that we've spoken about earlier, and the people that we interact with. Because there was so, it became commercialized.
And diluted.
And very diluted. So initiation became circumcision first, and that was not the case, because it came the whole lot of village. But now that school, that African school,
circumcision was actually a mark.
Exactly. It's a very small part of the whole thing.
It's like
that
a to show
certificate that you've been there. Your stamp of your SABS.
Your stamp of approval.
Authenticity. He's been there.
He's been
there. But at the same time, it also influenced how you behaved around women, especially if you knew that you'd been to the mountain. Then there are certain things that are expected of you because you are supposed to know better. You're supposed to have been matured, or you know, been given an education that will help you as a man to be responsible, to be accountable, and not to be violent, and to be a responsible family man or a responsible citizen. But now that education is gone. We're not putting it back into our school curriculum. And are we surprised that children are doing things that they don't know of? We should be worried. So where is that education gone? Because these children are very different. They're not the same way as we were. They're on social media, having access to things and stuff like that. So it's important for us to to be in touch with our spirituality and our connections and the things that are around us. Do you want to say something? Because I speak forever.
I'm loving it.
I'm looking at you. I'm like, I'm waiting for you to pause so you can interject.
Pause.
Tell me so.
We are talking to Neo Matsunyane.
Neo M.
name. Can I?
There's
what
a
is
reason
the
for that.
Kimundu. I know.
Mundu.
Mundu. Mundu. Mundu. Mundu. Yes. Yes. Yes.
No, but you know why I call myself Neo Matunyane?
Yes.
If you go on Facebook, for instance, and say Neo Matunyane, there's like 100. Yeah, or something like that. And all of them were named after me.
Oh.
And all of them, I'm related to them.
Oh, my.
But, and they're my relatives. I know all the Neo, but now I had to be devil. Like,
to
which
put
Neo
the
is it? Neo M. Matunyane. Yeah. It also sounds like, you know, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
F. Mary Neo Abraham.
M.
Neo
so
M.
don't forget yeah. the M.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Neo M.
No, no, no. I fight even on my, when you do credits on television, I'm like, yeah. M, please. Because then it says who I am.
Yeah.
Not that
wow,
other one,
that's what
know?
It is. Mm. So, yeah. If you thought we're going to be talking about acting and stuff like that, well, yeah, that's not going to happen.
We can, but I don't mind.
No, no, okay, no. I want us to go somewhere else because I we do things in a very weird way here.
Clearly.
Okay. Mr. Neo M.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, now I have to say Neo M, not
no,
just
no, no.
Neo.
You can say, if you can say Mr. Matunyane, you know.
Mr.
Matunyane.
Mr. Matunyane.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes,
then... Moving from, then you move from Sterkspruit and then you ended up go Boputatswana.
Yeah,
Koma
Higeng.
Koma Higeng. And how was the transition growing from being in Sterkspruit
to Mahikeng?
And to Mahikeng, because Mahikeng was,
I think my
you know, Boputatswana was a city.
Yeah.
It was a proper,
especially
Boputatswana.
Mabatu,
guys.
Was quite hectic.
Can I tell you,
was.
My first trip to Mabatu,
yeah,
I couldn't close my mouth. I was like, so wow. Are you saying black people
live here
because it looked amazing?
It did, yeah.
And now, when you're coming from the mountains of the confused weather of Sterkspruit, and then now you are in
Mahikeng.
Yeah, hey,
I
it's
think
hot that black.
It is.
Yo,
yes.
It's very hot.
My biggest transition, I think, Rami, came when I moved to Sterkspruit, actually, from Johannesburg to Sterkspruit. That was my biggest cultural. Oh, hang on. What is here? For starters,
everything is slow.
Yeah, but besides, even if, for instance, Gohai, when I was young, we had electricity from when I was very young.
Yeah.
We never had a cold stove at my house.
Mm.
Yeah.
No. Even growing up, 1970, 71, we already had electricity. We only housed with electricity in Zone 9, Maryland. So, we were bourgeois before.
My bourgeois.
You know, come on. We were like Zimbabwe. We had tar roads and then we had gravel. I'm kidding. But,
yeah.
So, and then I went to a place where there was no electricity at all.
Yeah.
And I was young because when I went to the Transkei, I was only 11 years old.
Mm. Yeah.
And but also the reasons were 77 Mzabalazo, the unrest in the townships. That's
they're
why
like
my dad,
my
dad was like
child.
You're not going to get an education in Johannesburg. So that's why they posted me to Sterkspruit.
Yeah.
But then the change was very different because, like, yes, it was rural for the first time in a long time. I mean, ever. I was 11 years old living in one of the most rural area I'd ever been to. And I was like, oh, wow. And I have to, you know, school is far, and it's a whole thing now. Now water, we don't press a kettle anymore. You gotta pump the primer stove. I gotta learn how to do the primer stove now. I'm 11 because I wake up in the morning and school is far, and so all the dynamics, my modern, even the small luxuries that you have at home, that you wake up when you wanna make a cup of coffee, you press a kettle.
Yeah,
that's something that small became very significant. That I need to either light up a proper primer stove or make a proper fire.
Would you say that? Would you say that the balance?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the bourgeois
to
contributed to the grounded spirit that
I
you
think
are.
I so because it's very nice because I was quite privileged, you know, in quotes, at the time in 1977, 76, you know, when we had electricity and stuff like that, because not every house had some of those little luxuries. Even something like a television was a luxury at some time, you know, and you were one of those two houses in the whole street that had television.
Yeah.
But, you know, and but at the same time, that kind of grounded me because I knew what it was to have almost everything, and I went to a place where I actually had almost nothing except a place to sleep. Because at the same time, when I left to go to this place, my dad remarried. It was after my divorce, his divorce from my mom.
Yeah.
So when I came back, and all of a sudden he lived with another woman. I was like, oh, how? Because he said to me,
guy.
No, you know what my dad said? This guy, he says to me, dude, when you come back, I was like, oh, okay, I'm 10.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I go back, I go to the trans guy. 6 months later, no, I'm fucking the album, photo albums, and like, oh, this guy had
they
a white wedding.
Yeah,
you didn't attend the wedding. You didn't attend the wedding.
I didn't know there was a wedding.
No, because he said this lady would be staying.
And Castuana, no, it doesn't mean I'll be marrying or will go. No, when I came back, it's like, hey, dude, he has photo albums. How do you do? You made a song, song, song.
Yeah, you made a song, song, song without you.
And now, again, as a child, I'm 10. What does that mean? Quick adaptation. Yeah. Okay, I got new mom. Boom. You know, but at the same time, do we filter such things that we put onto our children or that we absorb as children at that age?
Yeah.
That also changes your attitude, because in the trans guy, I lived with family friends, not relatives or body school or anything. Now, that further humbles you more, because you have no one to run back to, or if anything happens when the fit hits the shan, you know, there's nobody to run back to, and you're like, oh my goodness. Then you learn to humble yourself even more, because access to the world was also controlled.
Yeah,
when for me to call my dad, I needed to go to town, which was like a 45-minute walk away, and I needed to have 10 cent coins, and then you wind it up. Hello, hello, Faggy Marley.
And then sometimes you can't find him.
Exactly, you know, because I could only call him at work. We didn't have phones at the time. Yeah. 78 was way too back then. So when you try and reach out to the world as well, the world humbles you and says, I'm sorry, we can't get your dad on the phone.
Yeah.
And now that's another month of, my goodness, I don't have any pocket money, because the last one you had, you made a phone call, so you can't get. So it also puts you in very extreme situations sometimes.
Yeah.
And you have to make live under those situations, because otherwise you're dead. So it ends up with, that's why some other people end up taking abuse in their relationships.
Yeah.
Because there's no other alternative, nothing else to go back to outside. No.
Yeah. Some have become.
Either whether it's by financially dependent or even emotionally dependent.
True.
Some people, you know, you do get emotionally dependent on some people, because without them, sometimes you can't function.
There are no options.
There are no options.
Yeah.
People don't talk. You know, Ramy, about men especially.
Yeah.
Now, women have a lot of things that they can and that do talk about. But men, when it comes to the things that affect us the most,
and
we're like, because we always thinking this, we want to look weak. But you know why that happens?
Yeah.
It shouldn't. Because sometimes people use your vulnerability against you.
Yes.
You come to Rami, or you remember him and Rami, you know what? Man, I've had a bad month. I've had a bad month, my brother. Please, man, I just need, just can you give me $200? Get hell again.
And then I pick up the phone.
No. The way it comes up is like, yo, Neotli, Awele, in front of you. He was so down and out.
He was like,
I was having two bad days. It's not two bad days, not 20 years, you know. But it's also how it gets interpreted. But then it goes further.
Yes.
And then you feel vulnerable, because now somebody has taken something that is, which is your biggest moment of vulnerability, and turned it into a joke to boost their own egos.
Yeah.
And but now it's very difficult for people to open
up.
Yeah,
and with men and egos, you don't
You can't. Because it means he can't fend for himself.
Yeah.
It means it makes him feel inferior.
Say,
because men, we want to believe we are the only providers that we can provide.
Yeah.
And that moment, when the reality of something happens like that, where you can't do what you think you can do or you're born to do, it really gets to you, and that it hits you hard.
I have always said that when you need help, and the point is you go through your phone, and you actually, of all the 250 names you have in your phone, you even lack one person to call.
Yeah. That's a big problem.
It is.
And at the end of the day, I always say you are surrounded by so many people, but you are always alone.
Yeah, but I think also people, our fears, we need to overcome our fears as well sometimes. Yeah. You know, Roms, I've known you, we spoke a lot on social media, but there were times when you could have, we can connect as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also that level of comfort to say, how well do I know this guy? As we grow up also, you also change friends. That's the other thing, you know. And then all of a sudden, Rami's met with this friend that you've only known me for a month. They don't know you. You don't know if you could can open up to me or not.
Yeah.
And you're the closest one I do. So there's only this much that I open up to.
Yeah.
So you never actually end up getting to know me better as a person, because it takes a little while longer. But at the same time, you are going through some hardships that you can't even share with other people. But at the same time, over the years, I've also learned that amongst those, in as much as sometimes you think that there's nobody to talk to, try somebody. You'll be surprised sometimes how people, how one person can sometimes open up. But sometimes people are also, you know, they don't know who to open up to, because also in these modern times, there's also financial pressures. There's also family. There's also this and that. So friends don't even find enough opportunity to meet.
Correct.
Just to meet on a social level. Hey, Roms, come, let's have lunch together.
Yeah.
Everything has to be planned. And only to find that actually the best meetings that I've ever seen happen are the ones that were never planned.
Ah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
But also, you know what I find? I actually was invited to come and talk to men.
Yeah.
And one of the issues that we were battling with is, why do we disappear when we struggle?
Yeah.
You know, we find that you post less on social media, you don't go out because you are kind of like going through a difficult time versus, you know what, guys, I am struggling, but here's my plan.
Again, I think, like I said, that fear of vulnerability. You say you will be, it's tunes, you know. Will people respect you when you when you can't? Yeah. Nobody, you know. So it's all those, you know, and maybe if you're in a relationship or if you're married. I know. Mm. And now you're married and they're like, yeah, he's being provided for by the partner. And now all that, you know, some people can't take certain things because of the history that we come from or because of what we think is right for a man to do. And here there are some guys that I know that would like literally took the job of being the house husband.
Yeah.
Because they were that good at it. You know, I know a guy who's a teacher, and the wife was like, dude, you're a better housekeeper than I am. I'm working and we cool, can we? And it's cool. Mm-hmm. But other guys will still stand and laugh as if they understand the dynamics of that family.
As if like,
as if it's something to be ashamed
of. Because
like,
it's the system that works. Okay.
The guy needs to provide the man needs to be
at home.
The couple was comfortable with it and they did it. And it's working for them. So I know a lot of guys will be like, but you know what? You are not in the position. You don't know what's there.
Exactly. Oh, guys, we're talking to Neo M. Matsunyane, Mr. Matsunyane in studio. And we're just having like such a beautiful conversation. I even like I'm, you know, unbelated, we don't line up questions and say, this is what we're going to ask and all of that. But now, I want us to talk about your love for the arts, which is also going to lead us to the kind of movies and projects that you're doing now, based on your passions, especially on gender-based violence, on raising good boys to come better and strong and very focused men and all of that. But you walk 45 minutes to go make a phone call. And now, when and how does your love for the arts start, or what? Is it because you are alone? You started talking to the pawns and
Let me just nip it right there.
Yeah.
It goes back to before I went to the Bundus.
Aha.
When I was about 7 years old, my mom used to be a part of what was called the Soweto Housewives League.
Hey, I push us.
What was that? Explain.
What was even that?
It's like a, it's a women's league kind of thing, but with no political affiliation. Whose main job was to social upliftment, raise funds for people.
Not like,
who
it's like society, but not internal. But it's like,
because I remember we used to take food and parcels to transit homes, you know, where people are underprivileged. So on singing Christmas carols and stuff like that. My mom was actually one of the first original creatives that I worked with. She wrote a script, a 5 minute sketch.
Yeah.
In which I acted, lay some of my friends around. So my acting started when I was 7 years old, and my mom was doing the sketch to entertain the people who would
Your
come.
Your mom is the bow wow, eh?
You know what I'm saying? And she actually used to write some stuff for when she was in the nurse school, Baragwanath Hospital, just to raise funds. And she acted in some, you know, some little sketches that they did. I mean, we still even have pictures of her. I remember wearing my dad's suit. I was like, Mom, what are you doing with my dad's suit on stage? Like, they were she was acting on stage, Baragwanath Hospital, raising funds for whatever it is that they were doing. So my first acting and acting job was with my mom when I was 7 years old, and she was teaching me stuff. And then after that, then we started a little drama as the very same guys, little sketch congregationing. We called it Stranded Sun. But we used to read magazines like Stuff Writer, where they used to write little sketches. And I remember in one of the Stuff Writer magazines that we had, we stole the names of the characters that they had to create our own story. But we stole the names like Ebuli Ftuma. They sounded nice because the magazine is Stuff Writer. So the story was also about thuggery and how living in the township could affect you into being something else. Yeah. So the names of they had to be funky, but be also relevant to the times we lived in. So from Stranded Sunny, that's when we started acting. I was in the how old was I? About 10 years old, acting in this little sketch molecationing that entertained a lot of people because we used to travel to go and perform. But then at the time, then Vinolia Mashego's father,
Collins
Mashego, the quintessential. That man, you know, that was one of the most talented people that I've ever seen and I've ever worked with. He liked our story so much that he came to coach us at my house, Mogarajing. And he lived next to one of my friends called Roni Mabitsela, who was my one of my actually my first director ever, and after my mother when we started doing this. But Collins Mashego, he came dedicatedly every week at some I live in earlier to come and see how he performed. And he was like, no, because he used to perform in a couple of professional stage productions at the time, directed by the legendary Ndata Sam Mangwane. They used to perform Ubu Unfaithful Woman and all the other shows that they did. And I saw those. My family as well, from a very young age, they used to take us to watch watch shows Abu Gibson Kente.
Yeah.
I remember watching Busi Carlo, How Long. Yeah, all the shows that were done before a lot of people were born. But that also, that was my introduction to theater.
Because touched my blood.
Yeah, we used to go to Mufulo Hall, AA2 Cinema, just to go and watch these stage performances. My father, because he loved theater, and my mother, because she loved acting in it, we were always out at the theaters. I used to go to movies, you know, from a very young age, go to Avalon, go to Lyric in and at the same time, then my school acting, I never stopped acting. When I went to the trans guy, they were like, what can you do? You know, coming from Joburg.
You're like, guys.
And I'm like, okay.
I'll just show your head.
And they wanted to raise funds and something. And so I actually recreated the entire show that I was acting in.
Into what bag?
No. Okay. I cast people, my fellow schoolmates.
How? Producer, director,
I was 12.
I was 12
at the time. And that was my first directing to say, I will recreate what I would be heading to work. And it played well.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was like, oh, wow. You know, so my first directorial debut was, I was 12.
Mm. Amazing.
You know,
I
was in standard 10.
What
standard
I love
two,
about...
I mean, eight, 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 I mean, sorry. Sorry. Yeah. Seven.
What I love about your life is you've kind of like have always been in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, but I also didn't know what to do because I wanted to be a doctor.
But you see, the importance of that.
I would never come to you as a doctor. You don't even strike me.
I'm glad I didn't because I wouldn't not allow you to come.
A belated moment for me is, you know, you gotta use every channel and resource around you. To help you define who you want to become.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever, however small an opportunity that you get to maximize your potential, however limited your resources are or can be at that particular point in time in your life, you need to start trying to maximize them. I mean, we did a Bantu Education Goskulung, and at the same time, but because I knew I wanted to be in the industry, or you also needed to learn how to speak properly. Yeah. I'm not saying you should speak English like a white person, but at the same time, you can't afford to be playing the black characters understood. All the time. You need to be able and understood. So we need to learn to speak properly, to say, sound discrimination, how to speak, and without sounding like you all come from a private school. But at the same time, you needed to make yourself heard. That's the two. An actor's most expensive tool is his voice.
Yeah.
You need to be heard properly. So people can say, what did he say? You know, you cannot be saying things that cannot be heard if your job is an actor. So everything that I've done so far, because I also very involved in performing the recitations and all that, I became quite popular with performances. So when I got to the trans guy as well, when I went to high school to do my standard 8, some other guys was like, hey man, small boy, because I was always the youngest in class. I started school when I was 4. So one of the guys were doing a stage play in when I went to high school, and this guy said, hey small boy, come here, you come from Joburg and you look like you fly. And because I used to excel a lot in especially with English recitations. Oh captain, my captain, you
know, yes.
Pimelo Mutina's father was my teacher.
Wow.
He drilled Captain into like my
your
head.
Your name dropping.
You 1977. I still know it by. No, Pimelo, I'm dropping.
I know.
Pimelo Mutina's name. She's my friend.
No, but what I'm saying is but that's what Romeo said, because it's like all of a sudden everyone that you say so and so was, we're like, we know that one. And so and so did this. Yeah. We also know that one.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're just like the star.
You know.
Let's talk about
Captain. No, I won't. So what? No, the thing is, what they did is like, then when I go to the Transkei, also when I go to Strathspey, they were like, "What can you do?" So I performed "Oh Captain, My Captain."
Yeah.
But Pimera's father had drilled it into my head so much that if we didn't come with a performance, it came with a hiding.
Yeah.
So every time I said, "Oh Captain, My Captain."
Yeah.
It became a performance of note. And they'd be like, Matsunyane Mone, you're not feeling this. And then, you know, you get hired until I felt it. But that also was like, oh, wow. So I came with a very different performance. Yeah, oh, Captain, when I went there, because of the background that I had from Collins Mashiko.
Yeah. Mm.
So my performances were kind of stood out as well, you know, in a way. So I started acting in that drama as well when I was in Standard 8. And when I left, that's when, after Standard 8, because now I was doing science subjets, that's when I had to go to Buputetswana. So the change for me there was like, oh, okay, better than Joburg, but not as beautiful as Joburg. You know, that's me with my Joburg mind.
Yeah.
But very different from where I'd come.
Yeah.
Also because the languages now were different. Now I had to study South Sotho because I was in the Coastal Experience. Then I got to my figure and it was like hardcore Setswana.
Mm. Yeah.
like hardcore Setswana that I'd never come across. I was like, whoa, Barolo, Kankali. You know, I'm like, hey, what are they saying? So it came with a lot of challenges as well. Yeah, and, you know, I remember when I got into the first Setswana lesson, they were asking me who I was. And this woman, this teacher was like, Matsunyan, akawiti Setswana. I was like, haki siti hantle, mem. You know? And she was like, oh my word. He just mixed the two languages in one line. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And, but then I made the point to say I will master my language. Mm. And that's why when it comes to Setswana now, and I'm like, you can't even. You and can't I made it. The point that in, like, I speak very good Setswana, I think. Quite good.
No, you do.
But
you
so
do.
At the same, then that led me into doing other things that were outside my scope. Then I started translating, then I started subtitling, but that all came with the knowledge of languages that I amassed.
Yeah. That
so
leads,
they became better
that leads me
in
to the artist bubble.
Yeah.
And the artist bubble where I think one thing that you got right was not get stuck in doing one thing and reinventing yourself, because I think also as an actor or a thespian and you kind of like are always looking where your next role is going to come from, the question is what do you do while you wait? And I think you mastered that, and I think that for me was one of the reasons why I really wanted us to talk to you today.
Okay. Yeah, and the thing is also my mentor, the late John Rogers, was very responsible in a way for what I would become. He was very frank and very honest in his thinking and in his questioning as well, but also quite diplomatic sometimes. He was saying, so where do you see yourself in 10 years? That was the first question he asked me when he saw me sitting on a dolly that didn't even have a camera, and I was doing Malunya One. So I was sitting there pretending like I was on a dolly and shooting a movie, and he said, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I said to him, I think I'll be directing in 10 years. And he says, really? So what are you going to do about it? I said, I don't know. I'll go to Pretoria Tech and study drama. And he said to me,
it's like, no.
Get yourself a driver's license.
Okay.
And he said to me, I can teach you more drama than Pretoria Tech ever will.
Yeah.
Get yourself a driver's license.
Okay.
But at the same time, I also looked at myself in the screen. I was like, you know what? I'm short. I can't play Danny DeVito all the time. Yeah. I can't play a school kid all the time.
Yeah.
There's going to be a time where I'm going to have to play adult, but I'm still going to look young. And it became a problem, but I had to anticipate that.
Okay.
To say, I'm not the tall, I'm as tall as Romeo, and but I'm not as short as a baby Jake. I'm somewhere in between. You know. But at the same time, it's also knowing your strong points and your weaknesses, but also knowing what you wanted to get. The first thing John asked me to do was, what do you want to be? And I said, I wanted to direct. So he also helped channel my energies to towards what I wanted to achieve in life with as minimal resources as I had. Because one of the things I did was when I was still in Standard 8, I went to the what was called, which is now the National School of the Arts. I got to the National School of the Arts. As I walked in, I found this lady sitting on the desk. I'm like, hi, ma'am. With my...
what did they used to call it?
The School of National School of Speech and Drama or something like that. It was a very long name.
It was there,
So when I got into to the desk, I said, hi, ma'am, Kiswiri, when my JC certificate at the time, Standard 8, I'm like, okay, then it can allow you to go into the next school, you know.
Right.
Ma'am, I did very well in Standard 8. What do I need to get into this school? This lady was so embarrassed, the white lady. She was like, it's a government school. I was like, oh, okay, so what do I need to get into a government school?
No, and she said, you just put your name down.
Yeah, you know, I thought like, she'd say that, but you know what she said? She said, it's a white only school. And I was like, at the time it was.
Yeah.
I walked out of there in reverse. In case somebody killed my ass, because I was like, I was light. I was like 14, you know, 14, because I started school as I was very young. So for me, that was a blow, because here I was, young as I was, wanting to go and study drama properly, and I was denied because of my skin color, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, I'll prove to you that I can be bigger than whatever you guys can do. So also it means I had to read. I knew what I didn't have. I needed to find that power in books.
Yeah.
Right. I needed to find that power somewhere, wherever I could. Mm. So sometimes even as a lead actor, if an opportunity came for me afterwards to do work as a runner, or
you've done everything.
Exactly. There were times when I used to watch toilets.
There was a time when you used to make tea. Yeah?
There was a time when I was a runner. There was a time when I was an assistant.
There was a time you were like an extra, even though you've been a lead so many times.
I know.
And the people are like, are you that bored?
Yeah. And I'm like, I needed to learn more, but I needed to have the tools to say, when I'm directing somebody or when I'm talking to someone,
I also know
what it is, and I also know what a runner does. You know, or if a runner, like there were some other runners who refused to work after 6, and you're like, but dude, if you're gonna drop off somebody in Pretoria at 6 o'clock, how do you not drive back? Do you call that extra work? So there were also, but then you also get these challenges. Now people want to throw weight because our industry is built on ego and relationships.
Yes.
But firstly, relationships are not ego. Now people tend to throw ego first, and you're like, you know what? I've been an actor before. I've been a crew member. I've been a runner. I've been in anything you can imagine. So that also helps ground me, but at the same time, it also gives me a very strong sense of authority.
Yeah, because then you're equipped. You can't give me that. I know. I've done that before, and I know how it works.
Exactly. So if I'm going to ask for a performance, it's not like I'm going to ask for something that's also impossible to attain.
Right.
You know, it's things that I know are doable, you know, as long as you agree. So I've been very fortunate in that way that, you know, I've somehow managed to maximize on very minimum resources, and it's a blessing.
Okay, with a few minutes that are left, and I just want to ask a few things. I'm going to ask you all the questions at once so that you can do the thing. One of the first things is like, you know, in the townships, we had all these theaters that we used. I mean, they were halls basically, but we did. You would sit on a tea stainer to watch a bioscope on someone's sheet.
In someone's dining room.
All of that. And then we had sketches or skits, or we had drama, as now it has kind of evolved.
Stage plays,
And there was a lot of youth empowerment in terms of there'll be like ballroom dancing, and then we'll go for training. Then there'll be a session during the week where people came and did karate. Yeah. You know, like back in the day,
there was always in different you know, I think they were how they were affected. You know? Those,
yes, that's where my question is.
Yeah.
How has that been affected, and how can we? What do you think are the ways to make that right? Because AI2, for instance, it shouldn't be standing there empty, looking what it is. Mm. And just because we put Soweto theater there, it means we can forget about AI2. You know?
I think, Remy, one of the things that affected that was the fact that during the 1976 uprising and 78, around about there, all structures that represented government, including township halls, became targets of our anger. And they were destroyed. I remember there was a new hall that was built in Meadowlands, Zone 6, and we were using it, and some councillor came one day and he was like, I built this wall, and he chucked us out. Unfortunately, he got killed in that only that because he was a councillor during the apartheid things and stuff like that. But the very hall got burned. So all these structures that represented authority and especially government got destroyed within the townships. Now, for us to go back there, it was another thing. Now, the cinemas that were open, we started being in town, like your Ster Kineko and stuff like that. Now, people also wanted to go to town to watch movies and also do other things. So now they killed the culture of going to the cinemas within the townships. Also because the cinemas and townships were not also given the same movies as we're playing in town.
Yeah, because they will come a year later.
A year later when you don't want to see them. I used to go to Lily Cinema or AA2. You know, it's only very rare where I remember seeing King Kong at AA2. They would show one, very rarely would we see other movies in the township. So because they only streamline certain kind of movies to the township. So they...
They choose what you wanted to see.
And also didn't give us them. So people ended up not wanting to see those movies because we've seen all this movie is so old, or it's not relevant to what we want to see. So people ended up going to town and not supporting the local ones. Now that all of that is gone, now that's why they had to build Soweto Theatre to say, theatre in a community. We need this, but we need this theatre. In Johannesburg, one of the things that kills us is that most of our theatre is in town. And there's no transportation to go back to the location. You want to go to the Market Theatre and you live in Tembisa. How are you going to get there after 8 o'clock or after 10 o'clock
if you don't have a car? Next to Bri, Alhambra.
Exactly. Alhambra and stuff like that. So there's also no access to these places. It's very difficult to create a culture for people and when they don't have access to it. There's no point. That's why most of the cinemas, even in the township, they die. Because our transport system in the country is quite a problem. You know, when you try and come up with this and these other ones are objecting to the other ones. So it has been a problem. But at the same time, it doesn't mean our minister should look into those who say we need to start building, Mapedi Hall is still there, to start building those little theaters if you want to promote the arts. To train as well. My daughter, Momo, for instance, likes to train young actors, and she's even teaching go after. But at the same time, one of the things that she talks about is like, I would love to have a community theater, go Meadowlands or go Kai Kai, because she likes that.
Momo is Lisedi.
What's wrong with you?
Sorry,
like Naoki Romeo. I mean, come on.
Stop it.
Next question, please.
Where to?
Yeah. Yes. I'm busy at the moment. I just got a job actually on Friday working for a major television station.
Hey, oh, congratulations.
Major. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, we're dealing with spirits. Okay. Have you ever seen this program, like Long Island Medium?
Yes, Hollywood Medium.
We're doing something similar. Okay. I'm not going to tell you who it is or who it's for, but what it's going to be called. But I'll be directing something like that. But it's also a very interesting medium because we are spirit.
Yeah,
you know, and until you recognize that spirit in you, you'll never know how to interact with others. So you need to find a way of communicating.
Mm.
And you know, I was reading something actually about spirits the other day, that the shamans, for instance, when the people that we say are not maybe mentally okay or that have mental illnesses, with the shamans, they're like, no, but those people are communicating messages from a different world. Because you don't understand them, you can't declare them mentally unfit.
Absolutely.
So until we learn to decipher some of these messages, until we learn to open our minds to other forms of communication, like I was saying, in my communication this morning, to say, you know, sometimes our biggest prison as human beings is your mind.
Mm.
If you're not going to allow yourself to grow beyond your own limitations and your own thinking, then you are going to be imprisoned psychologically forever. If you're not going to open yourself to say, you know what, in as much as I follow this particular kind of religion or way of life, let me learn about the others as well, so you can make better decisions informed on your spiritual contact, because not everybody you're going to come into contact with will be in the same spiritual line as you are.
Yeah.
And until you learn to interact with those other people,
we need to hold it there. We need to hold
it. Okay, guys,
can I go now?
Yes, you can go. But before you go, Gonna ask Romeo's question. How do people get a hold of you on social media? Who are you on social media?
I'm on Facebook.
I know you're Neo M. Matsunyane.
Yeah.
And then even on Twitter.
On Twitter, Neo M. Matsunyane. I do have a silly handle, but if you say Neo M. Matsunyane,
What's your silly handle? What does
it say? It's Nosferatu 17.
Oh yes, that's
Nosferatu 17.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fine.
But if you say Neo M. Matsunyane,
it will show
will be
up. Then Nosferatu 17 will show up.
It will come.
Okay. Guys, if you don't know who Neo is, I'm sure you've gotten the hang of it, but find him, Google him, because he is big like that. When you type his name into Google, he really, really shows up, even with images, and you can see the cuteness that we've been talking about.
Really?
But it's been such an absolute pleasure having you in studio with
us.
Thank
you so much. It's been a blessing for me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
And we wish you nothing but the best.
Amen.
And what a beautiful morning it's been.
you
must hire me. Guys, that has been Belighted today, and we will see you some other time. Have fun and have a beautiful week ahead. And that's us. That's it from me and Maromza.
Yeah.
Say yeah.
Ow.
Be lighted.
Thank you, guys.
Voila.
This is Kwela Teza.
And you're listening to Belighted with Rami and Romeo on
Cliffcentral.com.